It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Wednesday. Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Wherever you're listening, however you're listening, we just appreciate you being a part of today's presentation. I am Jeff Howe. Craig is in the building. However, Craig is on a Zoom call right now. This is one of the big annual meetings that the Texas Sports Hall of Fame Committee, which Craig is a part of, that they have. So Craig is dealing with Texas Sports Hall of Fame stuff this morning. He will be on with us at some point, and perhaps with some further information on that, in addition to talking about maybe getting back into one of his vices. Anything I talked about before the show last night, that NBA playoff bug just jumped up and bit him.
It did.
He had to get back in the game. It pulled him back in. Our illustrious producer behind the glass, the publisher, curator, otherwise Major Domo at FlexATX.com, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram, the Thursday Night Flex here on the Horn. He is Snoop Daniel. And Snoop,
Man, the
bug got you, man.
It did. I was bored. God, I'm so bored. So let me tell you how bored I was. After the show, I went to a movie at the theater, and I saw, why do I keep forgetting the name of it? It's the part two.
You saw it yesterday, and you forgot
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the movie, it's the part two, like, oh my God, what is it?
Quiet Place.
How the heck do I keep forgetting it? Yeah, the one where you have to be quiet. And by the way, 8 out of 10 stars for me. It was so good. So I did that, and so I got out the movie at 3. I was still bored. And then I tried to take a nap, and then I was more bored. And I'm like, I have to do something. And there was one website that I haven't blocked myself. Actually, I think it just emerged after I blocked myself from every gambling site on the internet known to man.
Oh, Snoop.
I found the one.
Oh, Snoop.
And I registered. And let me tell you, I won like every one of the bets I put down.
Oh, just when he was done.
Dude.
Pulls him back in.
I need it like this time of year, though, because I'm not as busy. And I told Crow, I don't know if you were here that day, but I'm just better busy because.
When I saw your tweet the other day that you were contemplating going to eat at the Waffle House, I'm like, man, Snoop's bored.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Did you make it to the Waffle House, by the way?
I did.
The Whiz Awful His House?
Loser. Yeah, I don't know. I need to get a girlfriend. That's what it is.
Well, you do what you got to do, Snoop. We're behind you 100% here at Light the Tower.
I'll keep you posted.
And at the Horn.
On my look.
And our texter. Specs text line is open 337-3776. So we got a couple of notebook segments today. Inconceivable. And, you know, Snoop, this is kind of, it doesn't necessarily fall under the three pillars of Inconceivable. It's kind of an offshoot, but
there's no meth or death.
It's not meth or death, and it's not technically an animal attack. It's an animal infestation. And it's an animal infestation that we deal with in this area. And apparently, it has come to Williamson County. So we'll get into that in Inconceivable. And then Craig will be with us coming up an hour. So Craig, I guess, Snoop, what did he – because he and I had a very brief conversation this morning before his Zoom call. I guess he said hour number two he's planning on being in here?
Yeah. And then, like, I even think the meeting even started late, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he needs to be on it because he's kind of.
Oh, yeah. He's very much a part of that committee for the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. And there are. Craig and I went down the ballot a little bit this year during one of the breaks yesterday. I'll let him get more into that when he's back on in hour number two. But some Longhorns that are very deserving. And there's a backlog of candidates, so now is kind of the time to get some of those folks in. That's a great deal. Have you ever been to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, Snoop, in Waco?
Is Luke Axtell in it?
Luke Axtell's not in it.
Nah.
It's, that's random. No, Luke Axtell's not in it. What made you think of Luke Axtell?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, you know, you could have gone Chris Mim, Brad Buckman, but oh, Luke Axtell. Okay. Yeah, he's not in it. No, so I first went when I was a kid. It's kind of one of those deals that I think it's kind of a spring break type deal when you're a kid and you're not, you can't afford to go to the beach or whatever. You just got to, hey, let's go to Waco and hang out. So maybe the Texas Sports Hall of Fame was kind of spare when I was a kid and I just didn't know any better. But it's been a while since I've been there, and I was thinking about this morning. I think the last time I was physically in the building, Charlie Strong, when he did the Coming On Strong tour, his first off season, the last stop was at the Texas Sports Hall of Fame. I'm pretty sure that's the last time I've been in there, but it's changed a lot, and it's really nice. And the folks that are in charge of that thing have done a really good job of taking it to the next level. There's a whole Southwest Conference wing in that building now, and you know, whether you're a Cowboys fan, a Mavericks, Rockets, Rangers, Astros, whatever, college football, whatever kind of fan you are of sports in the state of Texas, there's something in there for you. So it's a cool place. It's a cool place to kill some time. Yeah, if you're ever around the Waco area, Snoop, and you need to kill some time, it's not a bad place at all. So again, we'll talk Texas football and basketball in the notebooks. But right now, Snoop, at the top of the show, I do want to get into something. By the way, thanks everybody on Twitch for following along today. Snoop, what is it? How do they find us on Twitch? I know if you open the Horn app,
that's what they want.
The Twitch feed pops up right away.
That's what they want us to push. Okay. Go to the website and then hit the Twitch. Don't go to twitch.com.
So go open the Horn app, go to hornfm.com. The Twitch feed automatically pops up when you open the Horn app, or if you go to hornfm.com, Twitch feed is right there. But it is 94 days until kickoff. And thank you, CB, for the Charlie Strong Coming On Strong tour bus. Wow, that's a lot. It seems like it was 7 years ago, Snoop, that all that happened, but it feels like a lifetime ago. You know what else feels like a lifetime ago before I get into what I want to talk about right now here at the top? There's all the old school feed, like old school 70s, old school 90s, those kind of handles on Twitter that just post, you know, old news stuff.
This day in history.
Yeah. Entertainment. How about old school 80s with the post this morning, just about a half hour ago, June 2nd, 1987, Snoop. The Seattle Mariners selected Ken Griffey Jr. with the first pick in the Major League Baseball draft. He graduated from high school 2 days later. Ken Griffey Jr. hadn't even graduated high school yet when he was the number one overall pick in the draft. And, of course, 2 years later, Upper Deck issued the most iconic baseball card, in my opinion, of my lifetime.
Yeah.
The 89 Upper Deck Griffey, number one. Which now, air high five, both you and I have that card.
Yep.
So, that's nice. So, yeah.
Thank you, Brana.
There's a very young Ken Griffey Jr. with a very, very full head of hair. Oh, signing something when he was drafted by the Mariners. So I thought that was cool. Check that out. I figured you'd enjoy that, Snoop. As we've talked trading card collecting and getting back in the hobby, that card, man, it's still, I looked at it in my office today on my way out. It sits there up on the shelf. And I'm like, man, that's such a beautiful card. So at any rate, enough about baseball cards and Ken Griffey Jr. Let's talk a little Longhorn football. And we're 94 days away from kickoff, Snoop, 94 days. And I want to incorporate this as we get to, you know, the countdown to, because I think really once you get to 50 is really when you can start kind of really wrapping your head around it. To me, once you get to 30, once you're 30 days out, then that's when the real countdown begins. But nonetheless, CB and others on social media do a great job of reminding everybody how many days there are until kickoff. And there are not a lot of great Longhorn players that wore 94. Todd Hunt, good dude. Todd wore 94 during his career with the Longhorns. Alex Norman was a guy that wore 94 the brief time he was here. I think Thomas Marshall was on the national championship team and wore 94. A guy that I was really hoping would have a nice Texas career was Gerald Wilbon. Gerald Wilbon wore 94. Great story. A kid from the New Orleans area, went to Destrehan High School down in Louisiana. By the way, Snoop, do you know who the most prominent alum from Destrehan is?
Mm-mm.
That'd be one Ed Reed. Ed Reed from the New Orleans area went to Destrehan High School.
Okay. Yeah. Head buster for the Baltimore
when Ravens. I went down there I went on a little recruiting trip in New Orleans, which, man, if I'm going to get to expense out a trip to New Orleans, I'm going to make the most of it. But I so I went down to Destrin and did an interview with Gerald Wilbon, and man, they still, even that many years later, Ed Reed is still a very, very prominent player when you talk about that program and the history of it, and just among like kind of the faces of New Orleans football, guys that still get talked about. Obviously the Manning family, but the two guys they still talk about, people still talk about Marshall Faulk, and they still talk about Ed Reed. It's kind of the two, other than the Manning family, too. There's a lot of great talent, don't get me wrong, that's come out of that New Orleans metro area, but those are the two guys that get talked about prominently. But Gerald Wilbon had such a great story. Raised by a single mom, his dad went to prison on an armed robbery charge, and just kind of overcoming that and his relationship with his dad. And I went down there and met him and did the interviews. Great story and a great kid. It just never kind of clicked for him as a player, and he was a rotational guy but never really emerged as a starting caliber player, which I was hoping he would, and be able to do the media type stuff, because he was a really engaging kid, and again had just a phenomenal story. So not a lot of great Longhorns that wore 94, but the fun fact for today for the number 94, Snoop, let's go to 1994. Were you following Texas Longhorn football in 1994,
I'm Snoop? Sure, because I lived in Dallas. We didn't watch college football that much, but I'm sure. Educate me.
Well, it was year three of the John McAvick era, and the previous season was when I had kind of gotten all in on Texas football as a kid. Like growing up early on, like the 1991 season is the first year I can really remember watching college football. And the first, I can still remember sitting in my living room watching the play. It's a Michigan Notre Dame game, and Desmond Howard just makes this like layout catch in the end zone against Notre Dame. And that was, I think it was on the cover of Sports Illustrated maybe, but it's an iconic play. And I remember that play, and Texas was not very good at the time. So I had to have kind of another team to root for as a kid. So Michigan was my other team because I like Desmond Howard, and let's be honest, Michigan had cool helmets. So
yeah.
Michigan was kind of my team. But, you know, the year before is when I really kind of got engulfed in being a Texas fan, and I'll go over that tomorrow when we get 93 days until kickoff. But you know, that 93 season was year two under John McAvick, and two of the more humbling viewing experiences of my youth following the Texas program. Opened the season with a 36-14 loss at Colorado. They come back home, tie Syracuse, and then go to Louisville and just get steamrolled by Louisville in a 5-5-1 season under John McAvick. So Texas is 6-5 in John McAvick's first season. They're 5-5-1 the following season. So they go into the 94 season, and this is one of the more wild seasons in my lifetime following this program. So the 94 season opens up, Snoop. They play at Pitt, and can you think of a prominent Pitt Panther at the time that would have been there in the mid-90s?
Not Larry Fitzgerald.
I'll borrow just one of those horrible puns from Chris Berman. Curtis, my favorite Martin, was the running back for Pitt and ran for what felt like 600 yards against Texas at Pitt Stadium that day. But Texas opens the season. They go on the road, get a two-point win over Pitt. They come back home, get a win over Louisville. And then they go to TCU and beat TCU. So they start 3-0. It's a nice 3-0 start. You're 3-0 John McAvick. They come back home on October 1st, play fourth-ranked Colorado. And this is a Colorado team that, if you remember correctly, and this is where I make the Michigan tie-in, Colorado's coming off of that game in Ann Arbor where Cordell Stewart connected with Michael Westbrook on the Hail Mary. First time in my life I ever sports cried, Snoop. Michigan losing on a Hail Mary, because in my young football viewing days, I've never seen a Hail Mary connect. What are the odds it's going to happen? And it did. And by the way, do you remember who helped tip the ball, who was down in the end zone in that mosh pit of players? Mm-hmm. Ray Carruth was down there. File that away. And if we only knew then what we knew later about Ray Carruth and the just terrible human being that he is. Speaking of people and the file of people that need to be boiled in oil and have their fat sold for soap, Ray Carruth might have one of the first jackets in that file. Nevertheless, Texas plays a really talented Colorado team. Rashawn Salaam is the Heisman winner. So they lose to Colorado. They come back and beat Oklahoma in really what's one of the more memorable Texas OU games of my lifetime, because that's where everybody kind of, the James Brown story, that's the genesis of it right there in that game. And then, of course, one of the more iconic plays in the history of that rivalry, which is Stoney Clark stuffing James Allen at the goal line on fourth down, Oklahoma trying to put it in the end zone. So they have that game. Then comes kind of the point where things get really wacky. And CB just texted in a picture, and I'm going to get to that in just a second. And when you look at the numbers on the wall, Snoop, next time you go to DKR, just think of this number, and I'll get to it in the end. I'm stretching out today's fun fact.
I'll look forward to it at 3:30 when we're playing Louisiana.
3:30 against Louisiana on September 4th. If you're not going to be there like Snoop and I, you can watch it on Fox. And if you're, you know, that might be a Tim Brando call, whether it is or not. But if it's a Tim Brando call, I would strongly urge you to just turn the volume down, sync your TV with the play-by-play call, and just listen to Craig, Roger, and Quan. If you're not doing that anyway, you're just doing life wrong. So Texas, they lose to Colorado. They come back and beat Oklahoma. Then the what's kind of known, what I've always known to, and as somebody just mentioned on the Specs text line, they go to Rice on Black Sunday as the number 12 ranked team in the country, and they lose to Rice in a monsoon where they had a bunch of suspended players. I think Mike Adams was suspended. Maybe Lavelle Pinckney was suspended. Multiple starters were out for that game. And Texas ends up losing to Rice. And that kind of started, so really starting kind of the month of October was wild. So lose to Colorado, beat Oklahoma. Lose to Rice, beat SMU. I remember the game out in Lubbock where they went, then played Texas Tech on the road and lost 33-9 and just did not look good. And you're thinking, man, this thing is spiraling out of control. They come back and lose to Texas A&M, and Texas A&M is important because the Aggies in 1994, they go 10-0-1. They're 6-0-1 in the Southwest Conference. But, Snoop, you will not – I don't know if there is a number for it on the wall at Kyle Field. Maybe there is. But in the official record books, you will not see a Southwest Conference championship credited to Texas A&M. Do you know why? Because the Aggies were on probation, and they were not eligible to win the Southwest Conference championship that year. So then Texas finishes the season. At that point, it seems like it's circling the drain. But they beat Houston, they come back and beat Baylor, and then beat a North Carolina team coached by Mack Brown in the Sun Bowl in El Paso to end the season at 8-4. And that 8-4 record, with a 4-3 record in conference play, remember I just mentioned all those losses, Rice, Texas Tech, and Texas A&M, those were conference losses. Texas ends up in a 1-2-3-4-5-way tie for the Southwest Conference Championship. So Texas, Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, and Rice can all claim a Southwest Conference Championship for 1994 with 4-3 conference records. And Texas does claim that championship because CB texted in a picture of the conference championship ring from 1994. So next time when you're at DKR, Snoop, on September 4th, and I don't know if you'll be there before then, probably not. But no. If you are, just take a look at the numbers up on the east side of the stadium, and where it says conference championships, 94 is up there. Even though there probably should be a big fat asterisk next to it, but because A&M was on probation, Texas, with a 4-3 conference record, got to claim the 1994 Southwest Conference Championship. And again, just one of the wackiest, most up and down seasons of my lifetime following this program. But it did, because they ended the year well and they won a bowl game, it did set the stage for the following year when Texas won the last Southwest Conference Championship. And even though in 96, there were some tough losses in there, there was a loss to Notre Dame in there at home that could have gotten the season on a different trajectory, Texas did get it together at the end, and they won the first Big 12 championship. So the last Southwest Conference championship, the first Big 12 championship were won by Texas, and the 94 season is kind of what got them going down the road with them able to get it together there at the end under John Makovic. So 94 days until kickoff, Texas and Louisiana on September 4th when the Raging Cajuns roll into DKR. That is our fun fact of the day.
We'll have
our countdown to kickoff.
1994 bump back music.
Oh.
So there we go.
Okay.
And then I guess as we work our way deeper and deeper, and once we get to like 1902, we might have to, I don't know if they have Billboard tracks from 2 days.
Well, then you can just go your favorite, you know, you pick a year that ends in like 2002 or 2012 or whatever. You know what you're doing back there, Snoop. I trust you to figure it out. All right, tell you what, we'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll get to the notebook and keep the Longhorn football discussion going with current things on the 40 acres, including a player pulling himself out of the transfer portal, coming back to the program. We'll talk about that when we come back on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Light the Tower with Craig Way, Jeff Howe, and Snoop Daniel.
It's the Thuggish Ruggish Bomb. 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 You're feeling the strength for the run.
Back here on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel. Craig Way will be back with us at some point during the show. He's handling Texas Sports Hall of Fame business. Snoop, I'm guessing if Craig was in here, this would not be a return cut.
No, fam. I couldn't play this with Craig in here. But with you and me and CB, we were shocked that this came out in 94 because it feels more modern.
Man, that did not sound right to me. But sure enough, it is, man. That's wild.
I still think that this is Eazy-E's greatest contribution to music, is discovering this group.
So,
I mean, NWA, of course, is great. But, like, I really think, like, Bone, like, this is a sports show. I'll keep it short. But just, like, their sing-songy and rapid lyric-style delivery, I think, echoes today. Because that's all you hear are rappers trying to sing. And remember when they were doing it initially, I'll keep it short, sports guys, but
no,
they were being panned for it. They're like, who are they? Like, they're singing, you know, but and then even when more rappers start singing, they pan them. I'm like, that's like a homage to Bone. And then the rapid delivery, the word count in the songs per bar, per 16, as the, like, you know, music people would say.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's that. But and Eazy-E put him on the map. So thank you, Eric Wright.
Who would you attribute NWA to? Would you say that was more of a collaborative effort?
Yeah.
Would you say
Jerry Harrell?
Jerry Heller.
Heller.
Keller. You give more to Jerry Heller than to Dr. Dre or Ice Cube for that?
Ooh, man, and Cube was so dynamic. Cube was like the Bobby Brown of rap, you know, like he was part of this super group, like New Edition, Bobby Brown, and he was so big he broke out on his own. So, we can talk all day about.
We could. There's a generation of people that, like young folks, Snoop, that they're only going to know Ice Cube from like the Are We There Yet movies,
right?
And they don't have any idea of what he once was in the rap game. So,
I thought
I'm always fascinated by that, just the different. The different lens and prism that people get viewed through by different generations.
I always thought Danny Tanner was like this clean cut guy. I had no idea he was a dirty comic.
Yeah, do yourself a favor. Just throw Bob Saget comedy into the Google machine and have a field day, especially him telling the Aristocrats joke.
Yeah, the dirtiest joke ever.
It's the dirtiest joke
ever. It's so terrible.
Yeah. There are some pretty horrible versions of it.
There's other versions.
His is either a different comic, like Gilbert Gottfried's done it.
Oh,
like
God.
there's a whole movie on the joke with different comedians doing the joke. But his is by far, it's either, depending on your sense of humor, it's either the funniest thing you've ever heard or just the most deplorable thing you've ever heard. And maybe it can be both. Let's go ahead and, we'll talk Bob Saget and Ice Cube and such another time. But let's go ahead and get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Love the good work the folks at Cedar Park Overhead Doors do. So the big news yesterday, Deli Adeyewe takes himself out of the transfer portal. I've been able to confirm he's back with the team and going to go through summer workouts on the 40 acres, which start today. And Deli Adeyewe is really interesting when you just kind of look at his career arc. This was a guy that was a really highly recruited linebacker initially out of St. Louis. He played his senior season at IMG. And Illinois was a big player in his recruitment because I think there was kind of a Lovie Smith tie-in at some point. Oklahoma very much wanted Delegadeaway, but kind of the saving grace for Texas in the recruitment was Todd Orlando. Todd Orlando had coached Delegadeaway's brother at Utah State, so there was that tie-in there with the family, and Delegadeaway ends up picking Texas. And I remember when he signed with Texas and Tom Herman's first comments on Delegadeaway, they really felt like he was one of the best, you know, kind of just true Mike linebackers that they had evaluated in a while. And they felt like he was going to be a guy to really man that position. There's nothing, the same things I can say about Delegadeaway as a player, and I'm just talking about strictly on the field. You could say the same things kind of about Juwan Mitchell. There are certain offenses you play, certain personnel groupings you see, certain schemes that you're going against where Delegadeaway is a good fit to have on the field. That said, there's also times where if you're facing a kind of a space and pace offense, an offense rooted in the air raid, there's going to be times where Delegadeaway, where the physical limitations, specifically the ability to make plays in space, teams will try to exploit that. They did it with Juwan Mitchell on the field. We even saw that at times last year. We saw it with Delegadeaway in 2019. But the problem that kind of got compounded in all that was the lack of inside linebacker depth Texas had in 2019, which resulted in Delegadeaway and Juwan Mitchell being on the field at the same time. Now, we saw last year, like when you paired Mitchell with DeMarvion Overshown, you can have one of those guys on the field at the same time, and you can mask it to an extent and kind of accentuate the strengths and hide the weaknesses. Again, at some point, there's just going to be certain offenses that they're going to try to exploit that matchup. But to have both of those guys on the field at the same time, it was a disaster, and that's one of the reasons why the Texas defense, one of the many reasons why the Texas defense was awful, because both of the, in 2019, because both of those guys were playing out of position. The biggest hindrance to Delegadeaway's career, I think it's twofold. I think one, doesn't really fit the mold of a Big 12 linebacker. Like, we talk about this all the time. The better linebackers in this league are guys that typically, unless you're a Malik Jefferson and you can just run, you know, 4.52 at 240 pounds and you're just a freak like that, typically the better linebackers in this conference, the better off-ball linebackers are guys that are converted safeties, converted running backs, or they were high school linebackers that played in high school at about 195, 200 pounds. And then you can bulk them up to 220. They've still got that athleticism, that speed, that ability to make plays in space. And there's no problem. Gary Patterson does this all the time with linebackers. That's kind of TCU to me is the school that's really kind of figured it out. We've seen Baylor at various times get close to figuring it out. I thought Matt Rhule really kind of hit the nail on the head with Terrell Bernard. Like, Terrell Bernard really is kind of the perfect Big 12 linebacker. But Gary Patterson really kind of piecemealed it together with guys that were high school running backs or high school receivers or safety conversions, and trying to just get the right fit for that position, because in this day and age, you've got to have guys on the field that can run. You've got to have guys on the field that can cover, especially at that second level, which is where the brighter offensive minds in this league, the Lincoln Rileys of the world, the Sonny Cumbies of the world, guys like that will pick you apart and they will destroy you and they will exploit that weakness in some way, shape, or form. So I say all that to say this. There's that part of it with Delegadeaway. The other hindrance to Delegadeaway has been injuries. He's had an assortment of injuries. He had a surgery that kind of got – it would have cost him last spring had there been a spring football, but it kind of got him off to a late start, and then just the wonky offseason, and then he ends up having a shoulder injury again in the fall, and that loss to TCU. He ends up having the surgery, and he's out, and that was the last we had seen of Delegadeaway. So now that he's back, he's still got a chance to be a player of consequence on this roster for the very reason that we just talked about, everything I just said about the linebacker position. That applies to Texas right now. I think this staff, especially when you're inheriting a roster and it's your first year and you're really trying to sort through pieces and figure out what you've got, I think it's all hands on deck right now and inside linebacker. Like, the plan is to start Devin Richardson, the New Mexico State transfer. The plan is to start him off at linebacker. We'll see how that goes. DeMarvion Overshone's back off of the shoulder surgery. Luke Brockermeyer did some good things this spring. Terrence Cooks is a young guy, flashed a little bit, but that's not a position typically where you want a true freshman to play unless they're either A, just that good, or B, you have no other options, and Texas has options, but can Terrence Cooks just be that good where he's on the field as a true freshman? We'll see. David Bendham might have had the best spring out of anybody in that linebacker group. Jalen Ford, I think, like a lot of young guys, Sark's even talked about it, the flashes are there, but you need to start seeing the consistency. Jaden Hullaby ended spring with an injury. So there are bodies there that they can sort through, and I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Even though, like I said, Dele Adeoye as a fit in the Big 12, it's not necessarily the best fit. But at this point, if you're Steve Sarkisian and you're Jeff Choate, the inside linebackers coach, and you're Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinator, you're just trying to throw bodies at the problem right now. And the problem is you just need to find some good quality depth at inside linebacker and let summer workouts kind of establish the pecking order. And then once you hit the ground running, once you get to camp in August, then you can let it sort out, get it sorted out on the field in terms of what that competition looks like. I want to talk Texas basketball in the next notebook. So we'll, and maybe we'll talk some baseball, but Craig will be back in next hour. So we'll get all that done. But I do want to talk a little more Texas football. There's one other topic I want to bring up, and maybe I can save this for tomorrow. But
Braylon James?
Snoop, you mentioned it. And when I saw his tweet yesterday, you were the first person I thought of.
Yes.
Like, Snoop is probably a really happy man. So, yes, Braylon James got his Texas offer yesterday.
Good. It makes me happy. So, well, you know, that's our little kinfolk. It's really cool, like, you know, like when you know of a kid before they blow up and then you see the glow up, and it's almost like unreal.
Yeah. Braylon James right now at 24/7 Sports in the composite. He is the number 130 overall prospect in the country for the class of 2023, the number 17 ranked wide receiver, the number 22 overall prospect in the state of Texas in the composite rankings. And yes, yesterday we've got him at 6'3", 175, picks up his offer from Texas. So Snoop, was he... You went over the story because you were really high on him going into the year. He was a transfer from Stony Point.
Stony Point, yeah.
Okay, Stony Point to Del Valle. That's what I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. And did he play varsity?
As a freshman, he played on varsity.
Stony Point?
His lone touchdown was against Vandegrift, against J.J. Parker, if I want to get specific.
But okay.
Yeah.
So then he goes to Del Valle, and kind of, you know, really with the Caleb Burton injury, he had the ball to himself for the most part last year.
And like, from a person who saw it early, him and Caleb were immediate best friends and hip and hip like the entire way. So he really learned a lot from Caleb, I'm sure.
42 catches, 442 yards, 7 touchdowns in 2020 for Braylon James. So you like this offer a lot, Snoop, for the Longhorns.
I do. He's just like a really long – and he's a betweener. I mean, he's like 6'4", but his – I'm not like a Mike Roach guy, so I can't exactly be dropping his 40 time and everything. But with the eye test, you know what he looks like? He looks, to me, he kind of reminds me of maybe a little slimmer Caleb Jones when he played for Austin High before he signed with Texas.
Yeah. I very much remember Caleb at that point of the process. Speaking of Caleb, not Caleb Jones, but Caleb Evans, the Tulsa graduate transfer. That's the other thing I wanted to mention right here, since we're talking about roster management and things of that nature. Mike Roach, my colleague in Horns 24/7, our recruiting editor, who Snoop just mentioned, who's on with us every Monday. Obviously, this week we had to move it to Tuesday because we were not here for Monday on the holiday. But he reported yesterday that Caleb Evans, the Tulsa corner, is on campus for an official visit. He was yesterday, according to a source Mike spoke with. The visit couldn't have gone any better from the Texas perspective. It is an official visit, but it as of last night, it wasn't clear whether he was going to stay the entire allotted time of the visit. He wants to get his trips in as quickly as possible. Texas is a school that other schools are worried about, but Notre Dame and Missouri are expected to be the primary competition for Caleb Evans, again, a Tulsa transfer. And, you know, it's interesting to hear Sark kind of go down, you know, what he said last week in Houston when he was talking about depth chart and just mentioning that. And it can be kind of coach speak at times when you say, oh, nothing's locked up, you want guys to compete. But, man, Snoop, you start going down this roster, there aren't a ton of spots where you feel like the depth chart is, like, solidified. Like, quarterback, for one, we know is not. Like, it's easier for me to pick out the positions that are solidified than the ones that aren't. Like, I think running back with Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson, the pecking order in that order, I think we all feel like that's kind of sorted itself out, and it's going to work itself out again as Sark looks to get his best players on the field, and we'll see what that process looks like once the season starts. Center, I think, on the offensive line is one that Jake Majors feels like he's got that job locked up. It didn't feel like he got really pushed by anybody else during the spring. It feels like they're going to roll with him, and they should. I liked what he did at the end of the year. Junior Anguilao, I think there's a couple spots on the offensive line where you feel like guys are going to start. I think Junior Anguilao is going to start somewhere. You feel like Christian Jones and Denzel Okafor are going to start somewhere, but that group as a whole is not solidified yet. You know, Snoop, other than running back, like tight end might be one that you feel pretty good about the depth there, with at least with Cade Brewer and Jared Wiley at the top. Interior defensive line, because it's one of those positions, yes, your starters are going to get obviously more snaps than your twos, but you want to have a good rotation. And I feel like with Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, Tavondre Sweat, Keandre Coburn, we'll see who the starters ultimately are, but like, we know the players, we know who the primary guys in the rotation are going to be. But that's not me saying the starters are solidified. Really, I think other than running, Bijan Robinson starting at running back, and right now, I'd say Jordan Whittington coming out of spring is your starting slot receiver. There's a lot that's up for grabs. So that's not Sark just giving coach speak. Man, you look up and down this depth chart, there's still plenty of jobs to be won. Corner would have been one of the positions that I said it looks like those jobs are solidified, but now you're going into the transfer portal and you're actively recruiting a corner to presumably to push Josh Thompson and DeSean Jameson, give you some good quality depth at that position. Maybe if a Caleb Evans were to pick Texas, maybe he ends up pushing for a starting job. We'll see, but I do like the fact that this is legitimately one of those times where you can hear a coach say, nothing on the depth chart is written in stone, and there's a lot of competition to be had, and you start looking up and down the roster, and yeah, there's not a lot of jobs that are in concrete, that are set. There's a lot of competition that's got to play out, and that starts today with the Longhorns getting back after it with summer workouts on the 40 acres. Take a break and come back. Inconceivable is next. Snoop, it's time for us to pay a visit to an old friend that's a nuisance in the area, but
all right,
something we like to talk about quite a bit here. Well, at least I do. I think you and Craig humor me, but I like talking about it. But we'll do that at Inconceivable when we come back on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
Walker the nurse.
Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit austin-orthopedics.com. Let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game, not just on the court or on the field, but back in the game of life, up and running at full speed. That's austin-orthopedics.com for Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Snoop, have you been kind of wondering what I've been hitting at this morning? There's a kind of an offshoot of one of the pillars of Inconceivable that I want to get to that's invaded the area.
I don't know what you're hitting at.
I take you to Williamson County, USA, where a Ring camera in Leander, thank you CB and KXAN who posted this, CB for sending it to me, bringing it to my attention, a Ring camera in Leander captured a pack of feral hogs. Neighbor Kim Green says they're tearing up the block. And if you just Click play on the video. You see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Whoa.
9 feral hogs. Whoa. Just 10. There's one straggler. Just running down the street in a pack, chilling, doing their own thing.
Gang, gang.
I don't know. I don't know if they're doing hood rat stuff or what. But, yeah, feral hog Snoop invading Williamson County, Texas, USA, in the suburbs. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's scary. And if I saw 10, I would run.
So, I just... Here's what, like, and I need a game warden or somebody with more expertise in this area to chime in. So I know, like, out in the country, like, people, you know, you trap hogs and do things like that because, you know, they're a problem to livestock and vegetation, and they just tear stuff up. I mean, if you're in a city limits, can you trap a hog, like, out in the subdivision in Leander? Can you set up a hog trap in your backyard? I guess if it's not violating HOA rules, can you? I don't know how that process works. I don't think you have any idea, do you, Snoop? No. I didn't think so. So, Specs text line 337-3776. Now, somebody said it's time to get the AR-15 out. Look.
AR-15.
People got to protect their crops or their livestock however they can. So, somebody says, yes, I guess if you do live in the city limits, you can, since they are considered an invasive species, you can set up a hog trap in your yard. Snoop, I might set up a hog trap in my yard.
Well, all right.
I mean, my dogs are at the point now. I got two labs, and they're great dogs. They just, they're not in the hunting / gathering stage of life.
Would you
point,
want your dogs, you know, to, what I mean, to approach a pack of feral hogs?
No, no. See, in my subdivision, now we're getting conflicting information on can you set up a hog trap in your yard.
Government.
Somebody says, no, the government trapper will come in. We will shoot them out of helicopters. All right, so the feral hog problem persists. No, this is one of the things I want to do this summer. Like, seriously, I'm serious about this. Since now we're at the point where we can have people back in studio, I want to get, like, a game warden or somebody with the sheriff's department that handles this stuff. Text out, I don't care who it is. We need to find a good feral hog expert, because I need to get my feral hog questions answered. So we need to earmark a segment for that at some point this summer, so I can get we can get the feral.
When Craig is out on vacation, I'm sure we'll need some filler.
Yeah, and at that point we could be like post Big 12 media days, just killing time before camp starts. So yeah, that makes sense. You know, we've been talking a lot about the trading card hobby, and sorry, my wife texted me, said she had an inconceivable topic. I had to text her back and said, we're in the segment right now.
What she got?
I don't know. She just texted me and said she had something, and I texted her and said, we're in the segment right now. You know, we talk a lot about the trading card hobby, Snoop. I'm getting back into it, and it's a lot of fun. I went and saw Walt to find folks at Card Traders of Austin yesterday. You know what I picked up yesterday, Snoop?
What'd you get?
Picked up a Gary Sheffield rookie card, that 89 Upper Deck series.
Hold on. Gary Sheffield, was he with the Brewers?
Yeah.
Yes! I remember.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
So I picked up a Frank Thomas rookie card, because the Frank Thomas rookie card that I had just a massive, like, bend in one of the corners, so
the big hurt.
Yeah, loved me some Frank Thomas.
He's
back
pushing
in the day.
Whatever his supplement is, and guys, she'll notice the difference too.
Yeah, I've seen him pushing.
Especially
those
Frank Thomas is a big old
what?
Oh, of a man.
You saying he lives up to that Big Hurt nickname?
Dude, yes, he's gotta. After I seen those commercials,
what is Frank Thomas like 6'6"?
Dude, he's a big dude.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, like a handsome guy. He has a good smile.
I just want you guys to know that Snoop bringing that up, not me. Well, Snoop, I can tell you that. All right, so we've gotten a couple of texts on the Feral Hog Talk. Casey and Colonel Flowers, Casey Stutter, Colonel Flowers, they might be able to give feral hog expertise. My man Matt Butler, my co-host on the Longhorn Blitz podcast, who does an outstanding job putting that thing together every week. Matt said he's got some folks that he can connect me to for Feral Hog Talk. So Feral Hog Talk's going to be a pretty big part of Light the Tower this summer, just letting you know. But Snoop, the bottom line on that Gary Sheffield rookie and that, yes, Frank Thomas rookie I bought yesterday, I didn't pay near as much as somebody apparently paid for what is now the most expensive trading card in history. According to The Athletic, this is on The Athletic's Twitter, Babe Ruth 1914 Baltimore News pre-rookie card just became the most expensive trading card purchase in history. What do you think this card went for, Snoop?
Rookie card?
They're calling it a pre-rookie card, 1914. Now, keep in mind, I think the most expensive card ever, it was either the LeBron or the Luka went for like 4.6. Oh. I think they both tied. So there's that Luka card that went for 4.6 million, that LeBron rookie card that went for 4.6
million.
Ding, 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 we have a winner, Bob. $6 million yes. Somebody forked over for this Babe Ruth card.
I'm Bob Barker.
The 1914 Baltimore News Ruth doesn't become available often. And the PSA population report for this card is in the single digits. That's how rare this card is. So if you got an extra $6 million laying around and you're a Babe Ruth fan, you can have what is now deemed the most valuable card in the entire hobby. We might talk baseball cards. We might talk rap music. We'll definitely talk Longhorn football. I don't know what we'll talk. And Craig will join us at some point. In hour number two of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.